of infrastructure for tomorrow will be on course 21 and over to the drafting team. Brigadier, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Clause 21. There is an insertion of a new paragraph to allow for the restriction of security measures on the certificate, which I'll explain just now. And then just rewording of one of the sub-clauses there for clarity's sake. On page 70, clause 21, where an infrastructure is declared critical infrastructure, the minister must issue a certificate of declaration in the prescribed form and manner to the person in control of that critical infrastructure, setting out A, the risk categorization, will be the proposal instead of category, as determined by the minister, the premises or complex where it's located, the conditions which the minister may deem necessary to impose for purposes of securing the critical infrastructure, and the new insertion, D, whether information regarding security measures will be restricted. So this will be on the certificate itself. Then 4, subclause 4 was rearranged a bit just to make more sense to the reader. Declaration of critical infrastructure does not exempt a person in control of critical infrastructure from having to comply with the provisions of any other law applicable to the critical infrastructure in question. This is just to make sure that people don't say the labor laws don't apply here or the health laws or whatever. This is to bring home that message. When we look at clause 4, Chairperson, on page 71, the overview, there are some insertions proposed to clarify some of the issues. And those were discussed in the committee. The proposal is that the security manager must be an employee, demarcation must be practically possible, constitutional rights must be respected. So clause 24 on page 72, subclause 7, the insertion that's proposed is that it must read, a person in control of a critical infrastructure must appoint a person in the employ of the critical infrastructure as security manager, just to prevent the case where a person in control will appoint a security company, for instance. Then subclause 8, a person in control of a critical infrastructure must, as far as practically possible, demarcate and place a notice in the prescribed format and manner on premises constituting a critical infrastructure in order to notify persons that the premises are declared a critical infrastructure. This insertion is just to make sure that in the event that it's not possible to place such a notice, and my favorite example is always Coburg, which borders the sea, those notices won't be able to place those notices somewhere in the sea. So as far as practically possible, it must be demarcated. Then subclause 10 is a new insertion that's proposed, and it reads, a person to whom functions are assigned in terms of this chapter must exercise such powers and perform such duties subject to the Constitution and with due regards to the fundamental rights of every person. There was a submission before the committee that explains strict searches and types of things that happen at critical infrastructure, and this subclause will hopefully stop such practices where the right to privacy and etc. and dignity will be respected. Clause 25 on page 73, the overview. There are some amendments and insertions to ensure that persons who enter know that they may be searched and also that constitutional rights are to be respected. The insertion is there in clause 25(1), paragraph B. The first one, to issue a notification in the prescribed form that the critical infrastructure may only be entered upon whether in accordance with the provisions of subsection 2, and that persons or vehicles may be searched upon entering or leaving the premises in terms of subsection 5. That comes from one of the submissions to the committee. Then insertion of paragraph C, ensure that the notification as contemplated in paragraph B is placed at the entrance to that critical infrastructure, so that the person who enters that building knows that he or she may be searched upon entering or leaving. Then, chairperson, on page 75, paragraph B, for the purpose of granting permission, the security manager may require of a person to, subject to subsection 6, be searched by a security manager or security personnel under the direction of the security manager. This means that subsection 6 must be complied with, and we'll deal with that just now. The person in control of a critical infrastructure may determine that persons and vehicles leaving that critical infrastructure must be searched subject to subsection 6 once again. Now, subsection 6 makes provisions for the manner in which those searches must be conducted. 6A, any search of a person's body conducted under subsections 2B, 6 or subclause 5 must be carried out by a person of the same gender or as preferred in terms of paragraph D3 with strict regard to the right to privacy and dignity, and must be in accordance with the provisions of this section and any other prescribed directive. If we go to the next page, 76, paragraph B, when conducting a search of a person's body under subsections 2G, 6 and 5, the manner of search is restricted to a pat down of the person's outer garments to establish whether that person is in possession or control of a prohibited or dangerous object. So the type of invasive searches is, in other words, excluded here. In paragraph C, a search of a person's body under subsections 2B, 6 or subclause 5 may only be performed if, 1, a reasonable suspicion exists that such a person did not declare a dangerous or prohibited object in his or her possession or under his or her control, and 2, the manner of or place where the search is performed does not infringe upon the privacy and dignity of the person to be searched. Page 77, paragraph D, before a security manager or security personnel under the direction of the security manager may search a person referred to in paragraph C1, the person must be, one, informed of the gender of the person who will conduct the search, the manner of search, and the place where the search will be performed, and two, provided with an opportunity to express a preference regarding the gender of the member of the security personnel who must conduct the search. Now, this whole revision of the clause stems directly from the discussion that the committee had in this regard. Clause 26, the offences and penalties, just a brief overview on page 78. The clause was redrafted in its entirety to reflect the submissions and comments that were made. Strict penalties were adapted to be in accordance with the severity of the offence, and there are three categories of punishment which I'll discuss just now. 26.1. Any person who unlawfully hinders, obstructs, or disobeys a person in control of a critical infrastructure in taking any steps required or ordered in terms of this act in relation to the security of any critical infrastructure, or B, hinders, obstructs, or disobeys any person while performing a function or in doing anything required to be done in terms of this act, or C, furnishes, disseminates, or publishes in any manner whatsoever information relating to the security measures applicable at. And I think it must just be pointed out here, Chairperson, that we are talking about the security measures applicable at or in respect of a critical infrastructure, other than in accordance with any law that provides for the lawful disclosure of information or the provisions of the Protected Disclosures Act. Or, page 80, D, takes or records or causes to take or record an analog or digital photographic image, video or film of the security measures at a critical infrastructure or critical infrastructure complex. Or E, takes or records or causes to take or record an analog or digital photographic image, video or film of the security measures at a critical infrastructure or a critical infrastructure complex in contravention of the notice contemplated in section 24 sub 8 or 25 sub 8. And once again, the D and E paragraphs both refer to the security measures at the critical infrastructure. F enters or gains access to critical infrastructure without the consent of the security manager or person in control of that critical infrastructure, or G enters or gains access to critical infrastructure in contravention of the notice contemplated in section 24 sub 8 or 25 sub 8. H damages, endangers or disrupts a critical infrastructure or threatens the safety or security at the critical infrastructure or part thereof. On page 81, I threatens to damage critical infrastructure, or the next paragraph should read J, but unfortunately there is a typing error that was carried over from the bill. J colludes with or assists another person in the commission, performance or carrying out of an activity referred to in paragraphs A to I, commits an offence and is subject to subsection 3 and 4, liable on conviction to both to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 3 years, or to both a fine and imprisonment. So it's clear that the maximum penalties were brought down drastically. This is the first category of penalty that I referred to earlier. The second, we'll get to the second one, sorry. Subclause 2, any person in control of a critical infrastructure who knowingly furnishes false or incorrect information on an application for declaration as critical infrastructure, or refuses or fails to comply with a notice issued in terms of section 11.3 or 11.4. C, refuses or fails to take the steps specified in the notice contemplated in section 24 sub 1. Refuses or fails to take the steps specified in the notice contemplated in section 24 sub 1 within the period specified in the notice. Refuses or fails to comply with section 24.8, that's the demarcation requirement, in circumstances where compliance would not severely threaten the security at the critical infrastructure concerned, or page 83, F, refuses or fails to comply with section 26.8, commits an offence and is liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years, or to both a fine and imprisonment, or in the case of a corporate body, as contemplated in section 332 sub 2 of the Criminal Procedure Act, a fine not exceeding 10 million. This offence in subclause 2 obviously relates only to the person in control of the critical infrastructure. The second category of penalty is contained in subclause 3 on page 84. If the evidence on a charge for any offence in subsection 1A to H proves that the activity referred to was carried out with the intention to cause damage or substantial harm to critical infrastructure, a court may, in the case of critical infrastructure categorised as low risk, impose a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 3 years or both. B, medium risk, impose a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years, or both. C, high risk, impose a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 7 years, or both a fine and imprisonment. So this second category of penalty ensures that where a person had the intention to cause the damage or harm, the penalties will increase. The maximum penalties will increase. And then on page 85, subclause 4, if the evidence on a charge for any offence in subsection 1A to H proves that the activity referred to in fact caused damage, substantial harm or loss of property to the critical infrastructure in question, the court may, in the case of the critical infrastructure categorized as low risk, the penalty will go up to 10 years, medium risk, penalty to maximum 15 years, and high risk, a penalty to a maximum of 20 years. These are serious offenses where there was actual harm proved during the course of the criminal matter. On page 86, subclause 5, if the evidence on a charge for any offence in subsection 1C, D, or E, that's the disclosure or the photographs of the security measures, proves that the security measures at the critical infrastructure in question were clearly visible to the public or in the public domain, the court may have regard to such evidence as a mitigating factor in the determination of any penalty that may be imposed in terms of subsection 3. And this is to provide chairperson for those cases where security measures are in fact disclosed but are already in the public domain. And I think the type of example that one can use here is where critical infrastructure on its webpage has photographs of the security measures, etc., that would be regarded as in the public domain. Then finally, clause 26, subclause 6, still on page 86, whenever a court convicts any person of an offence in terms of this act where damage to or loss of property related to a critical infrastructure was caused, the prosecutor must direct the attention of the person in control of that critical infrastructure to the provisions of section 300 of the Criminal Procedure Act and inform the court accordingly. Now, section 300 of the Criminal Procedure Act provides for a procedure in terms of which the victim of a crime may request that the accused repay the victim for the damages that are proved. Clause 27 on page 87. These are mostly of a technical nature, chairperson, because clause 27 deals with regulations, and these are just to reflect the amendments made. The first one is on page 88. It's clause 27.1i, guidelines and standards to establish a system to categorize critical infrastructure or parts thereof. We already discussed that issue, in a low risk, medium or high risk category as contemplated in section 24b. And then 27.1m, in respect of security personnel, the words including a security manager were inserted there because the regulations will provide for the minimum standards that these persons must comply with, so the security manager must obviously also comply with those. And then as a result of the presentation by CIRA, subparagraph 2, such standards and training courses as may be determined and recognized by CIRA, that security personnel who render a security service at the critical infrastructure must comply with. The previous wording created the impression that the minister can determine the standards and training courses, where in fact the only requirement is that those training courses, etc., provided for by CIRA and developed by CIRA can be set as a minimum standard. And then subclause 5, still on page 88, the minister must table any proposed regulations to Parliament for scrutiny. The word notification is deleted before promulgation. And then any regulation necessary for the immediate implementation of the Act must be promulgated to coincide with the coming into operation of the Act. The words within 3 months after, well, the proposal is that they must be deleted. On page 89, clause 30, overview, insertion of new subclauses ensures firstly publication of the list of NKPs deemed to be critical infrastructure during the transitional phase, and also transitional arrangements to be made between Minister of Police and Minister of State Security if the Cyber Crimes and Cyber Security Bill is not in operation. And those will be contained, page 90, those will be contained, clause 30, subclause 8. The Minister must, by notice in the Gazette and within a period of 60 days after the coming into operation of this Act, publish a list containing the names of national key points or national key point complexes which are due to be critical infrastructure in terms of subsection 1. And then subclause 9, in the event that no legislation on cyber security is in operation when this Act comes into operation, the Minister must, in consultation with the Cabinet member responsible for state security, determine interim guidelines on the manner in which an application referred to in section 16.4, those are the information infrastructures, must be dealt with by any person performing a function in terms of this Act.
Thank you,
the legal team wants to add anything? So the big news here is 30 years is gone, now 20 years, in the latter category. Right. Thank you very much. Members, I think what we must do now, and we want to thank the legal team for their hard work, is that we go to the original bill and read it together with the B bill. And then we go page per page, clause by clause. If, for instance, there is any matters where members feel further work must be done, please flag it. I think we already flagged some issues in the presentation this morning, so that will be further work, but let's try and move through the document and see if we can't dispose of the bulk of the work, and those issues that are still contentious, we're still unsure, let's flag them, but those that are really this agreement on, let's try the people in effect creates the, you know, is the consensus points and the input, but let's just go then through the original bill. So, honourable members, we are on page 1. That is the front page. I presume there's no discussion on that. Then we move to the preamble of the bill and also setting out of the objectives of the bill. Is there anything there, members? That's on page 2. Okay. We keep the 30 years there, right on page 2. Then we move to page 3. We go there to the sections. Is there any consequential changes? I just want to get an indication from the drafting team in terms of the additional clauses and new inserts. There's nothing there. Yes, Honourable, yes, Honourable Strong, you're welcome.
No, Chairperson, what I wanted to find out is the logic flowing from this document that has been presented, whether the proposed amendments and rewording has already been phrase in this document.
It's in the V-bill. But there's, I think, two or three issues that we, I think members raised this morning that's not in the V-bill. The V-bill is the shorter document that was distributed this morning. Remember the presentation that was made by the legal drafting team is based on the V-bill. The presentation was actually expanding of the issues, but the changes is in the V-bill. Maybe if you don't got a copy, maybe there can be. Yeah. Right. Are you covered, the Honourable Ms. Longo?
Yes, I'm just partly covered because I thought, if for example, the recommendations as they are stated here have been emphasized, I think it was going to make our job much more easier.
See, we're going to the changes that was indicated here today is in this additional document that was sorted. So when we go to those issues, that's been covered. We're not going to go back to that because, I mean, we discussed it, we flagged the issues. So we're really actually dealing with those issues outside the issues of input and contention. Yes, you're welcome. Yeah. Yes, Parliament Legal, please go ahead. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Just from a procedural perspective, and Baba will also help us with that, all the amendments as adopted now by the committee go into a formal A list, which will look much the same as the people. And the committee first adopts that formally as the amendments that have come from the committee, and all of those are then incorporated into the B version, which is what you now have, Chair. Which will be the bill is introduced incorporating all of these changes. And
the logistical dilemma is that we don't got a formal quorum to adopt that at this stage. We've got a working quorum in terms of the rules. We've got four people, but we don't got the necessary quorum to do that now. So please advise us what would be your proposal.
Well, at the risk of delaying the committee chair, it's necessary for these amendments to be adopted procedurally in a formal A list, which will look much the same as your B bill. And then when that's done, then you move into your B version. And your B version will simply be all of these amendments as proposed appearing in the B list, which is incorporated in the original bill as introduced. And that will be the final bill to be adopted by the committee. And hopefully by then you'll have your quorum to adopt.
I mean, option would be then to ensure that we maybe get an updated list tomorrow morning. That would be the other option. And then to adopt it tomorrow morning, ensure that we've got a quorum of members, and then we can proceed with the other discussions. Would that be an option? I mean, the drafting team take on board the issues that was raised this morning. I mean, some of the issues we must maybe still discuss, but those matters that are included in that presentation with these consensus, we can include that then on the amended bill. What is the view? Is it just give an opportunity to consult?
Chairperson, yes, I think we've basically done all the work already, so there may be minor amendments to the proposal that's in front of the members now. So there may be small amendments and insertions and maybe other proposals to capture the essence of what the members discussed this morning, but yes, it can be done.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair. It's just a question for clarity. So, excuse me. So, ideally, the notion is that what we're going to end up with tomorrow is a revised version of the A bill as we have it here, but including the revisions and the amendments as presented here. So we're going to be looking at, start looking at one document, or we're still going to be going from A to B, just the one document.
The approach would be to look at one document. Yeah. But let's give the legal team an opportunity.
Yeah.
The Chairperson, I think it would logistically not be possible for us to provide one document capturing all the amendments by tomorrow. So we will have to work on this document.
Okay. So because I'm just wanting to be clear on what you expect. So the clause by clause going forward would be cross-referencing between the A bill and the updated B bill. We would sort of go back and forth to check that. All right. That being the case, can I just ask a question in relation to the changes that have been made and will be made to the B bill? Because I made a note of it in last week's discussions. That in the clause dealing with inspectors and inspections, I had raised the issue of the possibility of a provision for owner-procured auditing of security measures as an alternative to inspections by SAPS officers being the only option. I haven't seen that reflected, so I'd just like to get some feedback on whether that was processed, considered, and if it wasn't included, just some explanation of why that would have been excluded. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, no, unfortunately, I have to plead guilty. That slipped my mind when I went through my notes, so we will have a proposal on that ready by tomorrow.
Yeah, I see we've got now a quorum, 6 members, but I want to ensure that, you know, there's a proper consideration of the issues that was raised and that the members have a, you know, document that they can work with. So it might be more advisable maybe to come back tomorrow with giving opportunity to the drafting team to consider those issues and that we work then from that document. Is that fine, members? I just want to get the view. Otherwise, we can continue. I know members have opened the whole diary today, so it's open to the members. We're a democratic institution. I'm not going to. Please, members. Right, honourable members, I think there's consensus that we're going to continue tomorrow morning at 9 with the updated A-list, and then we take it from there. Is that fine? 9 o'clock. Thank you very much, members. We appreciate a venue of a Bawa. The details will be communicated by the Secretariat. Thank you very much, members, for your contribution and input today. We appreciate it. We will see you tomorrow at 9. Thank you very much.